Hi everyone, this is Sophie from SACOM, and thanks to Win for inviting me and organizing this conference. And I'm really happy to have an opportunity to speak to all of the people here in Vienna who cares about human rights. So the previous speakers have been sharing a lot about the key issues about workers' rights worldwide, and also the really important mechanism how to solve these problems. So for my sharing, I will be talking about China's case. I will be sharing about the garment worker situation in China, and as a labor NGO based in Hong Kong, how we're trying to resolve the problem. So it will be like a more micro level sharing, and hope to give you an example about the campaigns. So before we jump into the working condition in China, we can have a glimpse about China's role in global garment supply chain. And so this table is a statistics by ILO, and it's listing the top 10 exporters in 2017. And as you can see, China is the biggest one, and then it take up more than 37% of the global share. And this is another table also provided by ILO. And you can see it's the top 10 exporter of clothing in 2017. So in these two tables, basically you can see China still remains like one of the biggest exporter, and it took up about 1/3 of the global share. And it is said that in recent years there has been a lot of relocations happening in China. The garment factories have been moving from China to Southeast Asia, and then yeah, it's true. As you can see in this table, half of the top 10 suppliers are in Southeast, exporters are in Southeast Asia. So the next question would be, how has China's role been changing in this new development? So if we look into more detailed statistics, then we can see, so in 2017, actually 60% of textile imports of Cambodia and Pakistan are from China. And then over 50% of the garment imports in Bangladesh, Vietnam, and Malaysia are also from China. So we can see now Southeast Asia has becoming an emerging exporter of clothing. But where are those textile from? It's still from China. So China now is important in supplying textile to support the garment production in Southeast Asia countries. So what is the working condition like in China? Maybe I should talk about my organization a little bit. So my organization is a campaign organization based in Hong Kong. And what we do is we bring together workers, students, and also activists together to improve the labor rights and worker conditions in the supplier factories of those multinational corporations. So if we're a campaign group, the first step, the cornerstone of our campaigns is usually information. So how can we manage to get solid information to have a good campaign? We do undercover. So why we do undercover? One of the reasons is because there has been a lot of audits rolled out by the brands from their auditors. But all the audits are usually pre-noticed, and then there are a lot of cheating tactics are involved. So we believe that that's just part of the whitewashing tactics of brands, public relationships. So if we want to reveal the working condition, the reality inside the factory, then we have to do undercover. And then second is how we manage to do that. I can provide some background in China. So in China, there's actually a tradition of the worker and student solidarity allies. And it's actually a tradition borrowed from Korea's labor movement in 1980s. So what is going on is that there's a Marxist society in the universities, and these students who studied, who read Marxism, and then they also do practice. For example, they do investigation of the campus workers' working condition, and then during summer vacation, they also post as general workers to work in the factories located in southern part of China. So what we do, what SACOM do, is we work with them because they're going to post as general workers. So we discuss with them, like, we're going to have campaign. Can you go to the garment factories that are the suppliers of H&M, Zara, and Gap? So these are the photos taken by the students when they work inside the factories. So in this way, we can get firsthand information, including the photos and also salary slip and also timesheet of the workers. So we have been doing these kind of undercover investigations since about garment factory since 2017, because in early years our organization's focus was more on electronics. So we investigated about 20 factories located in inland provinces and also coastal provinces. So there are a lot of issues should be addressed, but due to time limit, I will just mention two. First is the occupational health and safety is still a serious problem. So you can see in the photos on the left hand, these are taken in a dyeing factory. So basically, workers are worked with chemicals which are irritating to their eyes, skin, without proper protective gears and with bare hands. And you can see the sewage were flowing all over the floor, and that even led to electricity leakage, and the worker died for that. And you can see the photos on the left are taken in the shoe factories. So when they're trying to refine the rubber, there are a lot of white particles, like really small particles, were produced, and the workers handle with that without proper gears, and then some of them got nose bleeding or have to take medicines after weeks of work. And then another really important characteristic of the production of garment in China is the extremely high productivity standard, target, and also quality standard. So in the photos on the right, it's actually taken in one of H&M's supplier. So in every production line, there's some screen, and it is written, there's a countdown, like how many time do you have? 3 days, 2 days, 1 day, and then you still have thousands of garment productivity target you have to meet. And you can see there's a lot of crying face because the workers are working way too slow, so their ranking is always crying face. And then on the left side, it's actually a fine slip taken by the workers. So basically, because these fast fashion brand, like fast fashion manufacturing, is really buyer driven, and then the brand who placed the order have a defected rate. In order to achieve that, the management will punish the workers for their mistake in the garment. So it is basically written, because of a mistake in the garment, the workers were fined for €5, and then for another fine slip is €10, which is really expensive. Like, even for me, it's expensive. And not to say for workers who earn really little, that's really a huge proportion of their daily salary. So we can see, if you're a worker, imagine you have to do as fast as you can in order to meet that really tight delivery time frame. At the same time, you have to pay attention to all the details. Like, even though like you're sleepy, you work for extremely long hours, but you are not allowed to make mistakes. Otherwise, you will have deduction of your salaries. And then another thing is about wages. We're talking about fair living wages all the time, and then a lot of brands have been rolling out these kind of related initiatives. But the reality is that for most of the garment workers, their wages are calculated by piece, which means that how many piece you can make, then how much you can get paid. And in that kind of situation, the minimum wage, the legal statutory minimum wage, sometimes is even not protected. We asked a lot of workers, like, do you know how much is a piece rate? And surprisingly, a lot of them even doesn't know, like, how much they are paid out of this piece, because the piece rate is not published. and the factory. So which means that it's everything is kept in a black box. Like you even didn't know how much you can earn out of this piece. And also I said garment factory is really buyer driven. And as you can notice in all these fast fashion shops, the design changed really quickly. And what's the impact on the workers? You can imagine if you rely on piece rate, then more proficient you are in these garment design, the more you can earn, right? But what if the design changes every week, then it's really unfavorable for workers because you'll become a slow worker in terms of new design, and then the design change every week. So basically, for workers, the stability of the wages is really low. And also, we have peak season, low season. So for low season, where there's not much orders, like how the workers' basic wage can be secured. So the whole wage mechanism in garment sectors is really problematic. Because Sacom started our fast fashion campaign since 2013, so today I would like to just use Uniqlo campaign as an example to show like how we work and what's our theory of change. I'm not sure if you know Uniqlo. So Uniqlo is actually a Japanese fast fashion brand, and it is emerging. It's a superstar because now it's the fourth biggest fast fashion brand, just after Zara, H&M, and Gap. So we started to look into Uniqlo's manufacturing since 2014. At that time, there has been lots of scandals about H&M, Zara, and Gap, but not much about Uniqlo. So we conduct undercover investigation. So for Uniqlo campaign, as it's a Japan company, and in Japan, the society is more closed. If you want to put pressure on the brands, it's really important to draw Japanese society's attention. So we worked with Japanese organizations at that time to have our campaign. For example, like Human Rights Now and other left-wing organizations. After we had the investigative report, we translated into Japanese. It's really important because they don't really read anything out besides Japanese. And then we flew to Japan to have a press conference there. We had lots of talks in the universities. That was actually a really interesting experience for me because in Hong Kong, what we do campaign is we just use speakers and banners. We just protest, like jump into their flagship shop to protest. It's protest, right? But in Japan, our Japanese partners told us that, no, it's not the way like Japanese society works. If you want Japanese consumers to take the issue seriously, to listen to you, then you should have a press conference. So I had like the first press conference in my whole life because my organization doesn't really do that. And also before, we never really send our reports to brands before the campaign. But Japanese organization partners told us that because Japanese company is really famous for suing activists for accusation of their companies, so you'd better send them beforehand. So actually, we adopt lots of the suggestions from the local partners. And that was actually surprisingly successful because Fast Retailing, the mother company of Uniqlo, released a corrective plan, as you can see. Sorry, it's Japanese. They released a corrective plan on the same day we published our reports. It's one of the most responsive experience I have had because, you know, like if you talk to H&M or you talk to Gap, they just probably just ignore you because we're such a tiny organization. But it's my first time to get a response, like a remedy plan, like on the same day when I launched the report. But of course, and then they even met the representatives of Sacom in Japan. Of course, as an organization, we don't simply take what the brands say they will do. So we revisit the factories and verify their remedy plan. Our revisit found out that they conducted several corrective actions, including they had construction in the factory to improve the ventilation and to build some sewage channels to avoid the the tragedy I mentioned, and as well as they abolished the fine system about the workers' mistake in the garment, and also they pay back workers' statutory overtime premiums. So there's some, I don't think it's a total victory because a lot of really fundamental demands we address wasn't fixed. For example, we think at the end of the day, it's really important to have an organizing base inside the factory. That's the only thing that can make everything work in the long term. But when we revisit, the trade union is still yellow union and that's not working. But at least we can see there are some changes. So besides the campaigns based on our investigations, when there's worker struggle happened in the factories of those international brands, we also do campaign, solidarity campaign to support them. So I will use Artigas case as an example. So Artigas is a factory manufacturing for Uniqlo. So it's a supplier of Uniqlo. The struggle began in 2015 when there are hundreds of middle-aged female garment workers went on strike to get their social security. In China, social security is really important because only when your employer contributes to your social security premium for at least 15 years, then after your retirement, you can get a minimum standard of secure from the government. You can get your pension. So the situation of these middle-aged women is that they have been working in the garment factory for 10 years or even longer, but their employer never really contributes to their social security. But they're about to retire. And then the factory told them that, okay, we're going to reallocate our factory to another place, which is within the same province. But the workers believe that the factory is doing this to avoid their responsibility to pay back the pension. And so the workers was really mad because they have been like devoted their youth, their like a lot of time into this factory, but they got nothing because the wages are not high, which is it's really difficult for them to have saving. And then now they figure out that I cannot even have my pension after my retirement. So they went on strike. And then this is the picture. The riot police were there to crack down. And then there a lot of physical assault happened. That was the struggle last 4 months. So I wouldn't go into detail here. But because the factory is going to relocate. So one of the workers' tactics is they sleep beside the machinery to safeguard from being moved to another factory. And then some of the workers went petition to the provincial trade union, and then because they don't have money to afford for the hotel, so they just sleep in the park besides. And so what we do is when workers organize themselves and went on strike, it's actually really difficult for them to make it a news because the whole political media censorship in China has become more and more severe. So they can went on strike for a month, but there's no reports on that. And if there's no reports on it, and then they went on strike for a long time, but the brands can always say, I don't know about this case. Like, it's none of my business. It's a Hong Kongese company who operates the garment manufacturing. They're just my supplier. But at that time, Uniqlo hasn't even released their supplier list. So Uniqlo can basically say, it's none of my business. And then I didn't see any media coverage too. So what SACOM do is that we do, first of all, media work. We make it a news. We make people know, like, there's some workers went on strike because of the misbehavior of the companies. And then because we had that connection to Uniqlo CSR people, so we also write emails to them, petition, and then we went to the flagship shop in Hong Kong for at least 4 times for this Artigas worker struggle. And then we also work with, for example, like Clean Clothes Campaign. We have the International Solidarity Week. We have partners protest in Uniqlo's flagship shop in the States, in UK, in Korea, in Japan, in a lot of places, so that we can put the pressure on the brands and then to force them to be on the negotiation table of with the workers. So at the end of the campaign, the Uniqlo released statements on their website about like in response of the case for several times. And then they also facilitate a negotiation before between the worker representatives of the strike worker as well as the supplier factory management. So in short, in the end of the day, the workers got some compensation. It's not a satisfactory amount, but it's better than their legal entitlement. Because in Chinese law, if you relocate the factory within the same province, then it's not, at least in Shenzhen, you cannot get any compensation. But after the campaign, and of course the workers organizing, they got something that's better than their legal entitlement. Yeah, so that is a quick review about our campaign. And another thing I want to mention at the end of the presentation is that there's actually a trend that is happening in China in terms of garment production. And what we can see is like the whole production has been more polarized, which means that on one hand, there are more larger scale factories, which is more regulated and the working conditions, it's a little bit better. At least they're implementing the law, the local law. But on the other hand, there are more and more really tiny home-based workshop that is popping up. And in those kind of, I think the speaker, also other speakers mentioned about that, it's really informal and then it is not covered by any labor law. And a lot of them just work without a contract, without social security. So that's another issue. And then why this kind of new development is happening? We think that it's really connected to the digitalization and also e-commerce in China. As you have seen, maybe you have heard about Alibaba or Taobao. So you can imagine how those small Taobao shops get their garments. A lot of them are just ordered from really small, tiny workshops. That's why we have Taobao villages. So as you can see in the map, there are a lot of Taobao villages. There are thousands of them. And Taobao village, which means it's a cluster of the manufacturing center where the Taobao products produced. So garment is on the top of the Taobao villages. There are hundreds of Taobao villages produced for garment. And then in those Taobao villages, it's usually not large-scale factories, but small household productions. So I think I've introduced the tiny improvement our campaign has achieved. And one of the improvements is that Uniqlo actually released their supplier list in 2017. So that sounds just a really small thing. But for us, we're really happy because in Japan, in general, the supply chain transparency is really low. They really see supplier list as a business confidential. So it's really rare for Japanese organizations, companies to release their supplier list. And Uniqlo is one of them. And because it's really a big company, it's one of the biggest companies in Japan. So we think that they could be the lead in the industry, like to promote the transparency. And then we also see, like, we monitor Uniqlo supply chain, start from a really tiny project investigation into one of the factories. And then we follow the collective cases in their suppliers. And then it's just like connecting dots, like from case. And we really want to see like huge, like bigger institutional change. And we think the supply chain release is one of them. So that's what we have done. But there are also a lot of limitations. First of all, is the lack of organizing base. So this is one of the biggest challenges in our work. Because in China, the only trade union that is allowed is All China Federation of Trade Union. And then it is part of the official. So in a lot of situations, it's not speak up for the workers, but it's addressing the mission given by the government, that is to remain a stable society. So when workers go on strike, it's obvious instability factor for them. So in a lot of cases, they're not supportive for workers, but instead they crack down the workers. or they try to ask the workers to compromise on a lot of bargaining. So it's really hard for workers in China to have organizing base, and that makes our campaign like difficult. There are some wildcat strike, but that's really hard to go in the long run. After the limitation, there's challenges. One of the challenges is connected to the new e-commerce trend I've mentioned, because it's really tiny, small workshops. And then there, some of them might be the subcontractor of the international brands, but a lot of them are just produce garments for Taobao, small shops. And how can you hold them accountable? It's really difficult. It's because they're informal sector. The labor law is missing there. And then the accountability is really hard to address. And the last challenges is about the whole political atmosphere in China. I have to say, in 2015, there's a mass arrest about labor NGO activists in China. And then in 2017, we have the foreign NGO law, which means that every foreign NGO operating in mainland China receiving foreigner funding have to report to the Chinese government and find a Chinese government bureau to be your supervisor, which makes the whole thing really difficult. A lot of things wouldn't be approved by the authority, of course. So, and also media, like the room of social media, not to say the mainstream media, but even the social media have been a lot of crackdown happening. Just two weeks ago, there are over 9,000 of social media accounts on WeChat were blocked, like overnight. So that is the challenges. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Sorry.